He is one of America's prominent sports commentators and columnists,
known for his fearless opinions and passionate dialogue.
I know, it's sad, but the best sports conversation has absolutely nothing to do with sports.
He has perfected the Daily Sports Podcast, having produced hundreds of topical, credible shows without even a hint of fake news.
No filters, no mute buttons, no BS, just me and whatever the hell I feel like talking about.
He has done 1,700 TV shows, written 8,000 columns, broadcast hundreds of talk shows, published a book.
He has covered every major sports event nationally and worldwide.
And yet, we still can't shut him up.
The ceiling is the roof.
And now from Los Angeles, inside his studio by the Pacific Ocean,
where he plans on hanging out with a beer immediately after this podcast is recorded.
Oh, man.
Here he is, Jay Mariotti.
The show is unmuted. I'm Jay in Los Angeles, and let's stop the absurdist charade right here, right now. The Warriors not only miss Kevin Durant dearly, but they will not win the NBA Finals without him. I can say that conclusively now. They were out of sorts offensively, awful in transition defensively, and pretty much discombobulated in general in Game 1. And among their many issues, they had Draymond Green only days after calling himself the greatest defensive player of all time being schooled by a gifted project from Cameroon who not long ago was studying to be a Catholic priest. That sounds like a 30 for 30. His name is Pascal Siakam. You know him now. And on a night when Kawhi Leonard was rather ordinary and Kyle Lowry was AWOL, Siakam kept finding his way to the rim in transition with a spectacular performance accompanied by the inspired play of Marc Gasol as the Toronto friggin' Raptors seized a 1-0 lead while posing this pertinent question. Is Kevin Durant even going to play in this series? Remember, Coach Steve Kerr said Durant won't play until he first practices. And unless Kerr is playing possum, and Kerr doesn't really play possum much, there is no indication that Durant is close to doing either. With Kerr calling it a definite long shot that Durant would be cleared for Game 2 on Sunday in Toronto. And if Durant doesn't play until later in the series, if at all, and if Klay Thompson keeps clanking shots, and if Green keeps jawing with Drake on the sideline, and DeMarcus Cousins keeps looking rusty, and Andre Iguodala keeps limping around, is it possible we are seeing the beginning of the end of the dynasty? Or, as we've seen before, is this yet another hole that the Warriors dig almost subconsciously to tease the masses, motivate themselves, and create another challenge to conquer? Whatever the case, they do need Durant, fools, and everybody can stop spewing the silliness that the champs are more fun and joyful and symmetric without him. In Game 1, they sucked. That is the word. And for now, the Warriors have met their match in the Raptors. And don't be surprised if the champs are down 2-0 returning to Oakland next week. Did I not suggest this on the previous podcast, right? Ding, ding. But hey, isn't this much more compelling than another Warriors victory in Game 1? Damned right it is, even if too much ABC attention is being paid to Drake, who wasn't quite as animated as a courtside troller, but did taunt his friend, Steph Curry, a couple of times, then wrote afterward on Instagram, I'm quoting Drake, "Steph Curry hair lint for sale on my eBay right now. Username, Draymond shouldn't wear 23, a reference to Michael Jordan. Yeah, Draymond, Game 1, should not have been wearing 23. He should have been wearing a big zero, because he was a zero in Game 1. Disruption is healthy in the NBA and in life, and if one night means anything, we the North interlopers are disrupting a dynasty.
All you need to know about sports today in 15 minutes, or maybe 18, you know, depending on the Warriors, the Steelers, Trump, and the LeBron James Media Network.
The Game 1 result was so predictable, with audio proof again on the last podcast. As the Warriors try to win their fourth championship in 5 years, as they try to three-peat, they misread the totality of the Raptors, who were fueled by their newbie championship crowd in Canada's first ever NBA Finals game and succumbed to the relentless performances of the aggressive Siakam and his 32 points, the wily Gasol, and the magical Fred VanVleet. Did you ever think you'd say magical Fred VanVleet in your life? But he is. Yes, Curry got his points, albeit quietly, but when you watched the offense clog and the defense wilt and Cousins fire up these futile threes in his first game in weeks, you knew that the Warriors were bordering on desperation without Durant. Again, as I suggested the other day and Charles Barkley mentioned himself, it's possible Durant has no interest playing in the series. I know he poked his head out of the locker room and he cheered on his teammates in the tunnel, but maybe he just wants to protect his injured calf with that huge free agency payday coming up. And maybe more to the point, maybe he wants his teammates to prove they can win without him. That's what this drama behind the scenes has been about all season, really since Durant showed up in Oakland. But here's another angle. Might Durant, say with an 0-2 deficit, suddenly want to rush to the rescue as Superman and try to lead the Warriors to a three-peat that could not be done without him? Here was Steve Kerr realizing this is his team until further notice, and oddly saying that the coaching staff didn't compile enough tape on the Raptors. Why? It's 2019. I could compile tape on the Raptors right here. All kinds of it.
Early on when they were not giving Clay any open looks and they were really sort of making life difficult for Steph, how much does, say, a Kevin Durant floater or a Kevin Durant spot-up jumper change the offensive dynamic at that point for you guys?
Again, I'll go back to my earlier answer. It doesn't matter until he's out there. So if he's out there, he's pretty good. So, but if he's not out there, we play with the guys we have, and we've got enough. We've won the last whatever six games without him, six games. So we have enough. But you play with the guys who are healthy, and you go. So we'll see what happens.
It should bother Kerr that Draymond, who was such a self-promoter in recent days, touting his maturity on the court, his all-time defensive prowess, and his dramatic weight loss, allowed Siakam to destroy him all night. The greatest defender of all time, destroyed by a guy who a few years ago was trying to be a Catholic priest in Cameroon. Here was Draymond vowing to do better next time.
What did Pascal Siakam do to give you guys so much trouble tonight?
I think he played an amazing game, obviously, but you know, he got out in transition a lot. Our transition D was horrible, and I let him get in the rhythm in the first half, first quarter, really. So I got to do a better job of taking his rhythm away, and I will, but you know, he had a great game, but that's on me.
Now, Siakam faded in the last two series because he's raw and he's new to the playoffs. But he did rise to the occasion in Game 1. Question is, what will the Warriors do to break him down the rest of the series? He slithered to the basket as Green flailed, and the Warriors looked a step slow all night. You can say it's rust. I would have thought they would have been rested having 9 days off. Nope. They looked like they were back in one of their ruts, as we see so many times in the regular season. Guys, it's the NBA Finals. Siakam knows it. He's a humble guy. He's also a superstar in the making.
I think, you know, man, it's amazing. It's just, it just proves that, you know, if you put the work in, man, and it's something that is so cliche most of the time, but, you know, that's the story of my life, just going out there every single night, working hard to get to this level and knowing that, you know, I have so much to learn and I have, you know, so much room to improve and grow. I think that's what makes it fun. And for me, just kind of falling in love with the game and wanting to get better and wanting to learn, you know, moments like this definitely, you know, shows that you know, is I'm going to continue to be myself, continue to work hard, and I have, you know, so much room to improve.
and Kawhi Leonard? I guess it should excite Raptors fans and the large segments of Americans who are tired of the Warriors that Leonard was not a monstrous factor in this 9-point victory. Because in Game 2, Leonard will be a bigger factor, but he's also a realist who knows that Durant is lingering out there somewhere.
For sure. I mean, whenever he does play or say he's going to be playing, then we're definitely going to have to, you know, prep for him. You know, he's another guy that could just score 30 points in his sleep. And, I mean, everybody know who he is, and for sure we're going to have to prep for him.
As for Drake, and here I go again, he and his agent were lectured by NBA Commissioner Adam Silver, who asked the rapper to tone down his courtside behavior and not act like a loon as he did during the Eastern Conference Finals. But Drake, you saw it, he continued to taunt the Warriors, though without the in-your-face antics, and we'll see if Kerr is as nonchalant about the Drake factor as he was before the series when he dropped some lyrics, you heard that, and said he called Drake on his cell phone. I don't think he called Drake on his cell phone after the game. Drake, who generally admires Curry and Durant and has tattoos of both, though he covered them with an armband in Game 1, showed up in a Del Curry throwback jersey. That's a tribute to Steph's father, who played for the Raptors back in the day. And satisfied, thrilled by the final score, Drake did engage in heated trash talk with Draymond, who should not have bit, but he did. And to be honest, Green deserved it. Not that Draymond thought so.
Just wanted you to talk a little bit about that post-game scuffle between you and Drake.
You got a question about basketball? It wasn't really a scuffle because I didn't hit him and he didn't hit me, or I didn't push him and he didn't push me. We talked. We barked a little bit, but I wouldn't necessarily consider that a scuffle. Not really.
And here was Adam Silver saying a line must be drawn with superfans, even a billionaire rapper who reps an entire country.
You know, as I said before, I mean, everything is a bit context specific. I think in the case of Drake, as I've said before, I mean, we certainly appreciate his super fan status, and I know he's beloved in the community of Toronto. I think certainly we don't want fans, friend or foe, contacting an NBA coach during a game. I think that even as Nick Nurse later said, I didn't even realize it was Drake, or hardly was aware that I was being touched. And I think those can lead to dangerous situations. If you're in the middle of coaching a game and you're completely focused, you obviously don't want somebody who's not on your team touching you. And I think that, and we understood that in this case, given Drake's relationship to the team, it's not the same as just any fan who happened to be courtside touching a coach. But I think that's an absolute bright line that we have to draw. So that's one example. And I'd also say, you know, that I think the issue for the league is that he has this ambassador type role with the team. So he is viewed a little differently than any fan sitting there. But at the same time, I think there are appropriate lines that shouldn't be crossed in terms of how a competing team is addressed, or the officials for that matter. And as I said, I mean, we league office had conversations directly with Drake and his manager, and I think we ended up in a good place.
You think Drake cares? He's up 1-0. And if the Warriors don't respond accordingly, can you imagine this rapper leading an NBA championship parade down Yonge Street? That's Yonge. Get used to it. You're going to be hearing that reference often. A. Curry, as usual, tried to spread perspective.
And obviously the Bazz, we were down 0-1, but it's not the end of the world. You know, new experiences for us all the way through, but, you know, we've proven our resiliency and ability to win games that we need to, and kind of answer the bell and learn from, you know, nights like tonight. So key call-outs or, you know, fast break points that they got, whether it was a make or a miss for us, you know, a couple of sloppy turnovers that really didn't kill us, but just added to, you know, their momentum. And, you know, obviously Pascal had an amazing game. He pretty much found a bucket wherever he was at. And, we got to do, all five guys got to do a better job of just being physical, being alert, and we'll be all right.
And to think the Warriors spoke so refreshingly about the Raptors and not having to deal with LeBron James and Cleveland again in the finals. Be careful what you wish for. No matter the finals winner, the NBA already has declared a massive victory. This is the one U.S. sports league on a golden track to successful globalization. The NFL, MLB, the NHL can only dream. And Adam Silver is thrilled that the Raptors are the rage of Canada. To what degree? Their postseason run actually is further diluting hockey interest in that country, where the NBA Finals will outrate the Stanley Cup Finals for the first time. Of course, the NHL isn't helped by a competitive imbalance. No Canadian team has won a Stanley Cup since 1993. And in some seasons, no Canadian teams even make the playoffs. And in wonderfully diverse Toronto, the Raptors have been a joyful revelation for a city routinely let down by the Maple Leafs and the Blue Jays, who haven't won titles since 1967 and 1993, respectively. So it stands to reason that those crazed fans are jamming into Jurassic Park, that space outside Scotiabank Arena, where fans were waiting in line as early as 4 a.m. on Thursday to be let into that viewing area 11 hours later. Then they had to wait 6 more hours for tip-off, but they're having a good time. Similar scenes are popping up all over Ontario and even in other Canadian provinces. No wonder Silver was thrilled in this ESPN interview.
To your point, it clearly demonstrates what an international sport we are. I mean, I look at what progress we've made in Canada since we expanded in 94. We have more players from Canada other than the United States than any other country right now. I think we have 13 players from Canada right now. The sport has become enormously popular with young people there. And also Toronto in particular is an incredibly diverse city. I think it's very representative of the modern NBA, where 25% of our league is composed of players that were born outside of the United States. So I think it's a signal of sorts to a global market. Of course, we've talked about expanding potentially to other countries as well. And I think it also demonstrates that, I mean, in the NBA world, still a relatively young franchise, having come into the league in 94, and look at the progress they've made. And I think finally just demonstrates what you can do with strong ownership of as they have there, and great management. And so we're thrilled.
A recent survey of the 30 most watched TV shows in Canada included 3 Raptors games and 0 NHL games. Remember, it's their sport, hockey. 4 million viewers saw Kawhi Leonard's historic buzzer beater in the Eastern semifinals. So while there's a relatively strong Boston Bruins following in Canada, they tell me, we the North are watching the NBA Finals, not the hockey finals. And that's a victory for the NBA and for basketball, the true global sporting pastime, with the league aggressively expanding internationally and making significant revenue overseas, especially in China. And you have to love Silver to fix a regular season that drags, even though it's only 82 games, almost half the number of baseball's ponderous 162. The NBA commissioner is pondering a mid-season tournament or a play-in tournament at the end of the regular season just to spruce things up. I love that guy. Just as his predecessor, David Stern, was the best commissioner of his time, Adam Silver is the best of his time. By default, perhaps. So how many tragedies have to happen inside Major League stadiums for baseball's greedy owners and a blind so-called commissioner to install expanded protective netting that extends down both foul lines? Why must Major League Baseball continue to prioritize its premium sight lines, which means fewer nets, higher ticket prices, when every new season brings awful scenes inside ballparks? Such as the latest in Houston, where a young girl was struck by a foul ball off the bat of the Cubs, Albert Almora Jr. She was rushed to the hospital, causing Almora
in just a devastating scene to fall to his knees and break down in tears on the field. The early reports on the girl are positive, but who knows at this point if the injury will have long-term impact on the girl. It took too many injuries, hospital visits, and lawsuits for MLB just to recommend that teams expand the netting to at least the far ends of the dugouts. But that obviously wasn't enough, as the girl and her family were sitting in the third row about 10 feet past where the netting ends. Just last year, remember, after the original edict, there was a fatality here in Los Angeles where Linda Goldblum was hit in the head by a foul ball at Dodger Stadium last August in a loge area, no less, and died 4 days later. As it is, baseball is in slow erosion in American culture, with fans tired of the slow and dawdling pace, the lack of action, and the desperately juiced baseballs that have devalued home runs. But it's the attitude of the fat cat owners that continues to kill the game, and it's unfair that Al Mora and other players have to deal with guilt trips when these plunkings are not their fault. They're just doing their jobs within a prescribed field of play. It's not up to them to install the netting. If it were up to them, the netting would encircle the entire stadium. No, it's the owners who are slow to respond, but they're fools. With every new story about a ballpark incident, more people are just going to stay away. Have you noticed all the empty seats in ballparks this season? That is not some aberration. It's the future of a lagging sport. Here is Al Mora, who was still grieving hours later.
That's probably what sucked the most. Just the way life is. As soon as I hit it, the first person I locked eyes on was her. So that's what,
Take us through your emotions after that. I mean, obviously at first you were pretty devastated, as everybody in the building was.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's all my teammates, Joe, everybody came out and obviously tried to talk to me, and obviously I didn't want that to happen, and I didn't intend for that to happen. And then credit to Miley as well, came to me and said, you know, try to calm me down. The rest was kind of a blur, the rest of that at bat. I finally came to my senses after the next half inning when I went over to the stands.
What did they tell you over there?
Just unofficial, you know, updates, but something I just couldn't hold it anymore, man. I honestly had to try to keep my composure during that at bat. But when that half inning was over, and I just couldn't hold it anymore.
What did the security guard say?
Like I said, just unofficial things that I wish I could say, man. I wish I could say more. I don't know. Or trust me, I'll be the first to know. But right now, I'm just praying and I'm speechless. I'm at loss of words. Being a father, two boys.
Commissioner Rob Manfred never shows his face in these situations. He's too concerned about protecting those ticket values. If it weren't for the cowardly fine print on the back of tickets that protects MLB from lawsuits, the sport would be put out of business by victims, and there have been many. The slow pace of baseball, which continues because Manfred and the union cannot agree on a 20-second pitch clock, lends itself to the mind wandering during games in a ballpark. So if adults are in danger by merely having conversations while waiting for something to happen on the field or looking at their phones, how does a young fan have any chance when a rock-hard, lethal ball is flying at her at more than 100 miles an hour? Shame on the owners. Shame on the yes-man commissioner. I hope a group of badass lawyers comes after all of you. Hockey is barbaric,
and Americans like barbaric. So even if Canada is not watching these Stanley Cup finals, ratings are up in the United States with the Bruins-Blues series turning nasty. Not that I ever advocate nasty. It was sickening to see St. Louis's Oscar Sundquist slamming the head of Boston's Matt Grizzlick into the glass, for which Sundquist deserved a major suspension, and that Grizzlick's absence helped St. Louis control possession and win Game 2. But hatred is building up in the series, and that generates interest in our hateful country. First, you had Boston's Connor Clifton bloodying Tyler Bozak with a high stick. Then you had the Sundquist response, and then the Blues' Robert Bortuzzo slashing Jake DeBrusque, leaving him doubled over in pain. Yeah, we had nasty, dirty hockey. Oh, boy. All of which came after Boston's Torrey Krug, playing without a helmet briefly, skated on the ice Game 1 and pulverized Robert Thomas with a body check that inspired the Bruins to that victory. So much for the new NHL, which was built on speed and skill. These two teams are the biggest and toughest remaining, so expect lots of heavy hitting and aggression as the series moves to St. Louis. Again, the Blues had the league's worst record back on January the 3rd. Crazy story. But behind Craig Berube, almost comically still listed as their interim coach, the Blues got feisty and dominated the Bruins in Game 2 with 49 hits. But it's the dirtiest hit that has New England's attention. Yeah, all those fans in New England always looking for something to complain about. Now they have it. And Bruins veteran forward David Backes, who once was the St. Louis captain, called out his former team and did expect the NHL to suspend Sundquist, who was whistled somehow only for a two-minute boarding penalty during the game.
I don't think that's a hit we want in our game. I think it's from behind, elevated into his head, into the glass. If that's a two-minute penalty, there's going to be a shortage of defensemen, I think, in the series by the end of it. But that's in somebody else's hands. That's something that I think if I'm making that hit, I'm probably watching from the bleachers for a few, but we'll see what happens with their player.
It's not often when the Bruins are out-muscled, so you can expect more hit fests in this series and more brawls and all those things that Rock'em Sock'em fans love, even though it goes against the grain of what hockey should be. You saw Chicago and Pittsburgh win recent Stanley Cups with speed and skill, but then a year ago, the Washington Capitals pounded opponents. The Bruins must ignite their top line of Patrice Bergeron, Brad Marchand, and David Pastrnak, which means Marchand will probably become a bigger pest than he already is, maybe even a rat, maybe he'll lick some faces, who knows what he has in store, but the Blues definitely have his attention. There was one cute story out of Game 2, the Blues' Carl Gunnarsson, who blasted a shot off the post in the final minutes of regulation, ran into Berube at the locker room urinals during the break before overtime. Gunnarsson told his coach, as they were doing their business there, he needed one more chance in overtime. So while taking care of his business at the urinal, they decided, yes, you'll get another chance. And just 3:51 into overtime, Gunnarsson scored the game winner. I guess you could say he was looking out for number one. Back to the NBA, and next time you see James Harden and Chris Paul in one of those State Farm ads ducking for cover in the one as Clutch the Rocket, that mascot, starts firing canisters from a t-shirt machine. You've seen that so many times. Just realize this. They were not so friendly to each other in the bunker after that Game 6 loss to Golden State 2 rounds ago. Inevitably, the same selfish tendencies that have hurt both in previous postseasons erupted afterward, with an argument ensuing, reportedly because Harden is not engaged when Paul is initiating an offensive set. So, Rockets general manager Daryl Morey doesn't like what he's seeing, and he has put Chris Paul and everybody else on the roster, I don't think James Harden, but he's saying everybody on the roster, on a legitimate trading block. Yes, this is an admission down there in Houston that the current roster is not working and that owner Tillman Fertitta is not willing to pay the luxury tax and that new blood is needed. So this is another failure for Chris Paul, who didn't get it done in the playoffs with the star-studded Clippers either. Morey, remember, has been obsessed with beating the Warriors, and because he can't, he has become a lunatic. But with the 34-year-old Paul in serious decline as an elite point guard while owed $124 million the next three seasons, who would want him? Okay, I know what you're thinking. LeBron wants Chris Paul. But I don't even think Jeannie Buss and Rob Pelinka, as inept as they are, would think that is wise. That would make the Lakers very old in about a year or two. LeBron, Chris Paul, old, making all that money. So I don't think the Lakers would be happening. I think maybe Charlotte in Paul's native North Carolina. The Hornets need a kickstart at the gate. Maybe Kemba Walker leaves. They inherit Paul for fewer number of years than Walker would get as a Supermax free agent. Maybe Miami, where the Heat are kind of dead down there. They need something going on. Possibly the Knicks if Kyrie Irving opts for the Lakers or the Nets. But face it, the Rockets are not going to be winning a championship in the James Harden era. And with Morey firing everybody from assistant coaches to exercise therapists, it took Fertitta to overrule Morey and retain head coach Mike D'Antoni, for now anyway, as the Rockets also court Ty Lue as an assistant coach and possible head coach in waiting. Houston is going to be drama central next season, which is saying something considering the entire NBA is drama central. Magic Johnson, as usual, got the last word concerning accusations that he verbally intimidated employees inside the Lakers' offices before his resignation, denying on ESPN that he did anything wrong while wishing he had the opportunity to hire his own general manager and coach instead of inheriting Pelinka and Luke Walton.
Two sides to Magic Johnson, the one that smiled before the camera and the one who was practically tyrannical as a leader for the Los Angeles Lakers. Your response to these reports?
I've been in business 35 years. I've had partnerships with some of the biggest companies, Fortune 500 companies in the country. Now, I've never sat in an HR person's office in 35 years. 2 years with the Lakers, no HR appearance. Jeannie Buss, do you think Jeannie Buss will allow me to abuse the employees? If that was the case, she would have called me in. Joe McCormick would have called me in, the lawyer for the Lakers, as well as Dan, the other lawyer. It never happened, right? I'm a person who brings everybody together, uplift the employees. I've never abused an employee, and I never will. That's not what I'm all about. Now, Rich Paul had access to the Lakers because he had two clients with the Lakers. He called and said, hey, I'm in Brooklyn. We talked about allowing him to fly back with the team. That's the only time he flew with the team, because he was in Brooklyn, and I allowed him to do it. That was on me. I allowed him to do that. Then let's go to, you know, Rob and I, when we were there, we worked well together. But the little things that was going on behind the scene, that bothered me. And last but not least, Lazy, I have built a $600 million business. You cannot be lazy going from playing basketball and winning five championships. So I wasn't lazy as a player, and I'm not lazy as a CEO and a business owner. That's never going to happen.
Okay, so you saw Magic. Where is Jeannie Buss, the controlling owner? Well, she is in hiding. So she allows Magic to control the narrative, and that is not good for her, because nobody even knows if she is alive at this point. It's really, she's going to have to speak up before the masses. There are season ticket holders who have done business with her family for decades. They want to hear from her. You've got celebrities, big-time people in Hollywood who want to hear from her. Where is she? And if she's just going to stay in hiding, that means she is incapable of running this franchise and she should sell the damn team. I have said that now at least 10 times. And because Lakers minority owner AEG, which owns Staples Center, is disgusted as well by her shocking absence of leadership, the pressure is going to be on. If the Lakers don't get anything done in the early portion of free agency, they can't make a trade for Anthony Davis. Nobody signs here of any worth. all hell is going to break loose, and I think the coup will be on get Jeannie out of there. Maybe she will just resign, or I don't know, maybe she'll just continue to hide. I don't know. And LeBron James keeps floating rumors that suggest he's coming to the rescue, not only to the Lakers' rescue, but to his own rescue. He's got to save the end of his career here. So he has been clubbing with former adversary Kyrie Irving in West Hollywood. He has been dining with Anthony Davis at Nobu in Malibu. And forget about LeBron demanding a trade. He might like that, and maybe he'll demand a trade to the Clippers, but he does want to be in L.A. for his son, Bronny. You know, it's Hollywood and his kids at this point. The Lakers are third or fourth or fifth, you know, on the list, depending on what documentary is put in his lap. He wants to be there for Bronny, who is headed to the High School of the Basketball Stars. It's called Sierra Canyon out in the valley. And he's going to be teaming, Bronny James, with Dwayne Wade's son, Zaire, and a talented UCLA commit, a sophomore, Amari Bailey. That is going to be a sports event in itself. Out in the valley, way out there, same 1,200-seat gym where the sons of Scottie Pippen and Kenyon Martin have played in recent seasons. That means LeBron, who lives in Brentwood, he and his wife and his family live in Brentwood. They have two homes. Don't be shocked if the Kobe Bryant helicopter comes into play here, because the 405 freeway, I'm just giving you a Mariotti aside, the 405 freeway, they would be getting on around sunset, and that is the most packed, jam-packed freeway in America, not just at rush hour, but almost any time of the day, sometimes at night. So when you're going up the hill, as they say, into the valley, and this school is way in the valley. It's up the hill and then down the hill, and then you keep rolling. I hope LeBron has done his homework about traffic patterns. I think you're going to be seeing Bronny James in a helicopter going to these games. I am not kidding. Otherwise, the poor kid, you're going to have to give him motion sickness pills, because I get motion sickness on these freeways out here when I'm in an Uber sitting in traffic. So I don't know what happens to a kid like that. A Mariotti aside, that's just local knowledge living here. I'm going to try to make it out there. Who wouldn't want to see this? Bronny, by the way, is listed at 5'10", 150 as a freshman, and his 11-year-old brother Bryce will join him, not yet on the high school team, of course. Will Sierra Canyon sell season tickets? I don't know. Back to Anthony Davis. LeBron is wooing him. However, new Pelicans GM David Griffin continues his hard sell on Davis, trying to convince AD to pair up with incoming Zion Williamson in New Orleans. Griffin and Davis did meet this week with the ubiquitous Rich Paul, agent for LeBron and Davis, but also somebody who respects Griffin from his days in Cleveland. However, everything we're hearing, Davis still wants out of New Orleans. He wants to be out here. Why do you think he's here now? People fall in love with the L.A. lifestyle. So Zion, who did sign with L.A.-based CAA, they will be his agency, likely will have a young core of former Celtics or maybe Lakers around him in New Orleans. That is, unless Griffin can cut a deal, a Davis deal with maybe the Knicks. Maybe they'll give up the number 3 pick and allow Griffin to reunite Zion with, yes, his former Duke teammate, R.J. Barrett. Now, that would excite the people in New Orleans. People down there don't really care if Davis comes or goes. They're not sitting there saying, oh boy, maybe he's coming back. They're tired of him. Once he says, I want out, bye. So I don't think Davis sticks. I think Boston will present the best deal. I think Jason Tatum will be part of that deal. Other than the number 4 pick, I don't really know what the Lakers could give up. Is Kyle Kuzma, a nice young player, in the same territory as Jason Tatum? Tatum slumped a bit last year, but Kyrie Irving had that negative effect on everybody. So, yeah, I think Jason Tatum has the bigger upside in this league than Kyle Kuzma. And Jason Tatum, Zion Williamson, other young players, that would create more buzz than Kyle Kuzma coming to New Orleans. So I don't think the Lakers have any shot, and I still don't think anybody wants to deal with Pelinka or Jeannie or LeBron. So hard as Rich Paul tries to match Davis with LeBron, Davis is going to have to wait a year in free agency. I think that team, such as Boston, that ends up trading for him will do the hard sell that, hey, this is the place to be. You want to play with old LeBron out there? Look at us, contending for Eastern Conference titles. I don't think Anthony Davis will ever play for the Los Angeles Lakers. I don't think it's going to happen. He should be considering the Clippers, just like Kawhi, just like Durant, just like everybody else. Kyrie, why? Nobody wants any part of the poison zone that is the Lakers. It's Steve Ballmer, Doc Rivers, and the Clippers. Also, Kobe Bryant is involved in the Kyrie Irving recruiting process. Is that not tampering? Given his friendship with his former agent, Pelinka, I think of all these free agents out there, believe it or not, Kyrie has the best shot of reuniting with LeBron, even though he couldn't wait to get away from LeBron a few years ago in Cleveland. But Kyrie's way out there. He is on another planet. You know, he thinks the world is flat. Yeah, he lives in that kind of a world. Maybe it is flat. I still say he will not come here. He'd rather go to Brooklyn or the Knicks. But the Lakers are in the Kyrie Irving radar scope, or whatever you'd like to call it. Again, who wants to be part of the LeBron aging process? Has Irving thought about that? And the Lakers may have to settle for shooter Bradley Beal in a trade with Washington that would involve Lonzo Ball. Yeah, get Lonzo out of here. Please do. And maybe the number four pick in the draft. Bradley Beal is a great perimeter shooter. That is what LeBron needs. The Lakers didn't have that element a year ago. For what it's worth, NBA Commissioner Adam Silver has confidence that Jeannie Buss will, quote, figure it out, unquote. If Adam actually believes that, he's one of the precious few. And much praise to Notre Dame basketball coach Mike Bray for echoing my thoughts amid college basketball's bribery scandals. Why aren't college presidents and athletic directors holding dirty coaches accountable by firing them? The answer, of course, is money. Lots and lots and lots and lots of money. And the likes of Sean Miller, Bill Self, Will Wade, who somehow have kept their jobs despite evidence that they were involved in paying players, are protected by those schools because of the money they generate, making the presidents complicit in the scandal. Yes, presidents, you are stinky, rotten, dirty, too. Will Wade at LSU was caught on a wiretap, for God's sakes, referring to a, quote, strong-ass offer, unquote, that he knew about that was made to a recruit at LSU. And somehow, Wade is still employed.
Obviously, this has been a difficult couple months for LSU and for our basketball program. As the leader of the basketball program, I'm here today to, you know, start the process of rebuilding trust and, you know, and building a trust. I think certainly, as I've had time to reflect since the, you know, since I was out for 40 days or so, there were some mistakes that I made. You know, but ever since that, when I was able to sit down and talk with LSU and meet with LSU and meet with the NCAA, you know, I was fully cooperative. I disclosed everything and answered any and all questions completely and fully with LSU and with the NCAA.
Cheating will continue in college basketball in the future, of course, but change is coming to the sport. The NBA soon will abandon the one-and-done system, allowing players to enter the league directly out of high school as soon as 2022. Until then, a precedent has been established this past week by top five prospect R.J. Hampton, who rejected Duke, Kansas, Kentucky, and college basketball entirely to sign with, drumroll please, the New Zealand Breakers of the Australian National Basketball League. I love this. The money Hampton will make down under is significantly more than he would have made in the NCAA for a year, even under the table money. He's going down there and making legitimate money. He's going to see the world. He'll grow up there, love what he did, and I expect more like him to follow, which will further dilute college hoops. I hope CBS and Turner realize that $1 billion a year plus that they invest in March Madness, that is becoming almost like an Uber stock right now. So, this much is obvious. A man as repulsive and dangerous as Richie Incognito should not be given yet another chance in the National Football League. He is established as a racist, a vicious bully, and a certifiable whacknut who just weeks ago pleaded guilty to disorderly conduct after his arrest for allegedly threatening to shoot the staff of a funeral home. One of his several recent run-ins with police. Oh, and it gets worse. In April, Incognito pleaded guilty to two misdemeanors after he punched a fist-sized hole in a wall in the living room at his 90-year-old grandmother's house, evidently blaming her for his father's death. Whoa. So when the Raiders signed Incognito this week, what the hell were they thinking? And they created yet another volatile storyline for what appears to be a certain Hard Knocks appearance. Is that what John Gruden's doing? He's doing this for TV? He's not creating a conscientious, high-quality, high-character football team. He just wants to be on TV. Maybe he misses the... Or they're just getting ready for Vegas. All of this in an offseason when the Raiders also acquired Antonio Brown and Vontaze Burfict, two more troubled souls who know each other well. Burfict, of course, once almost crippled Antonio Brown with one of his notorious cheap shots, and now they're teammates. But please, and I'm hearing this too, and you can hear the distress in my voice, keep in mind that Incognito is a separate issue from Colin Kaepernick, who apparently has issues as well with Incognito being signed by the Raiders, and also with pro-Trumper Nick Bosa being drafted number two by his former team, the 49ers, while Kaepernick remains unemployed, although he makes all that Nike money, so don't weep for Kaepernick. Even if Gruden and Mike Mayock seem to be forming a reality show more than a football team, you can say this for Brown and Burfict, although, Incognito, they say, as a passionate football player, I think he's off his rocker and should be in a straitjacket somewhere. But Brown and Burfict can play. Brown's a pain in the ass. Burfict is a cheap shot artist. Incognito did make Pro Bowl rosters during his time in Buffalo after his release by Miami following those slur-filled bullying episodes. Whereas Kaepernick, and this is my point about Kaepernick, as all of his activist defenders conveniently forget, his performance as a quarterback deteriorated dramatically. That's a point I have made often the last several years in this podcast. I once had a media conversation with a couple of other guys when I was working in San Francisco. Out of nowhere, a non sequitur. Kaepernick is talking about his offseason, says, my life will be just fine without football. It was like, where the hell did that come from? And then, obviously, you have seen in recent years what exactly he meant. And I'm assuming his life is still fine without football. In other words, the quarterback of an NFL team at the most important position in team sports, an expected leader on and off the field, a face of a franchise, doesn't really give a damn about the profession that pays him millions. At least Brown and Burfict, and even Incognito, for all of their many character flaws, do care about performing well. So the next time Kaepernick retweets a post criticizing the hypocrisy of an NFL team employing Incognito or another team employing Bosa while ignoring him, maybe Kaepernick should look in the mirror and realize that NFL teams will hire players, out of prison if they can play and if they care about the game. Kaepernick doesn't really care. That's what's lost in all of this. He doesn't care about football. He cares about activism. And I'm guessing he can't play anymore either, because back in 2015 when I had to cover him, it was the worst quarterbacking season I've ever watched, and I had to sit through a lot of bad ones in Chicago. Please, America, let this Kaepernick issue die. Few players kneel on the sideline anymore during the national anthem. The NFL has pledged millions upon millions of dollars to those issues that players were protesting, and those who still do protest and kneel on the sideline receive little attention. Kaepernick's crusade, make no mistake, was powerful, productive, and a symbol of the times, but it's now past tense, and so is he. So, Jerry Jones thought he and the Cowboys would skate right by that video showing Ezekiel Elliott using a forearm shiver worthy of an NFL linebacker, knocking security guard Kyle Johnson to the ground at a Las Vegas music festival because Elliott wasn't allowed to enter a restricted area. Not so fast, Jerry. Johnson, who happens to be 6 feet and 185 pounds and plays defensive back for a California community college football team, says he was not injured by Elliott, yet he wants a genuine apology from Zeke. And if he doesn't get it, Johnson is threatening to press criminal charges. And I think he's going to win because the episode is clearly on video. Here was Johnson speaking to CBS 2 in L.A.
Did you know that there was going to be trouble?
Not at first, but then when he started aggressively approaching me, I figured something would happen.
And when he shoved you, what did he say?
He just said, "What did you say?" And then afterwards, I didn't say anything and then just shoved me to the ground.
He never said he was sorry?
Never. Afterwards, yes. Did get an apology from him, but, it wasn't a sincere apology. He didn't really maintain eye contact. Mm-hmm. Did not seem sincere at all.
Did he appear to be drunk?
He appeared to be, slightly intoxicated. Mm-hmm. Obviously. You could tell, his eyes were just, his pupils were dilated, he didn't really seem to have any clue about, where he was.
So, if Elliott is smart, given his problematic past, he will issue that sincere apology, because the NFL is investigating, and rightfully so. This time, Jerry has no legal leg to stand on, unlike the last time when Elliott was accused of domestic abuse without being charged by police. And yet the league suspended him 6 games. This time you've got it on tape. I think he gets a game or two. Know this, as long as Jerry Jones is the owner, the Cowboys always will have something wrong in that house. Now it's time for The Buzz, our deep dive into sports and life. Chris joins the program. And Chris, the Warriors did not show up in Game 1, allowing Pascal Siakam to become a global superstar on a night when Kawhi Leonard was rather ordinary. Will it require Kevin Durant to come to the rescue, Chris, with big performances to win the series and secure the Golden State dynasty? I know the other day you were pretty confident. How are you feeling now?
Oh my God, now let's sound the alarms. Just days ago, Jay, we said Kevin Durant, we don't even need him to show up. Don't even take an airplane ride to Toronto. Why don't you just turn your jersey back in to the Warriors? You don't need it. Well, come to find out, they might just need KD. I'm not panicking. I was surprised. The Warriors looked flat. It looked like that 10-day rest affected them in a negative way, where they're a little sluggish. Raptors had the crowd. Raptors had the advantage of the home arena. Raptors coming off a short break. A lot of adrenaline. You could just tell. Did I honestly think that they were going to win? It didn't hit me until 3 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Oh, the Warriors are actually going to lose this. I think even if Kevin Durant doesn't come back, they still will win this series. It might go a little longer than I thought. I'll be honest with that. But I think once the Warriors get back in rhythm and put away the noise and aren't worried about Jurassic Park outside and not worried about Drake, it should be just fine, Jay.
And Chris, regretfully, Draymond did get into it with Drake after the game, following a bad defensive performance by the self-proclaimed greatest defensive player of all time. Was that a good idea to get into it with Drake? Didn't you just fire up Drake and all those crazy Canadians for game two?
Unnecessary, and that is the downside. And we've seen what Draymond cost them a series against the Cavs years ago, as we know, by kicking people in the junk. So Draymond's got to get it together. Don't be worried about Drake. Just smile on his face and go out there and perform, and he didn't perform. And to your other point, yeah, he let somebody who we didn't really know become a star overnight. As long as Draymond can stay focused and not worried about Drake and not worried about the noise and all that stuff, and not get frustrated when things aren't going his way, it'll be fine. Unfortunately, we know that's not how Draymond works. And hence, Drake could become a bigger problem if he's going to continue to chat it up.
And Chris, you've seen the excitement of the Canadian fans. Does it resonate even more when you see that the NBA is indeed a global machine, and the basketball rules the world? Not the NFL, not hockey, Certainly not NFL football. Okay, maybe football, soccer, but basketball. Who doesn't love basketball? All around the world, even in Cameroon, where Siakam was ready to be a Catholic priest and he decided to become a superstar basketball player.
It really is something to see how everyone's reacting in Toronto and the energy and the passion outside the arena in the Jurassic Park. It's amazing. It's a global machine. I think we already kind of knew that, at least in the Jordan era, but to see it come back is great. And it's also just great to see freshness. I know we're used to the Warriors, but to see a different team and to see the Raptors and Kawhi, who really, other than him being a little weird, there's not much you can get mad at Kawhi about. Maybe he didn't want to deal with Popovich's crap anymore. That was a downside. But the guy's a tremendous basketball player. And the fact that he's doing this with a team that he necessarily didn't want to be at least that's what we thought, is pretty impressive. I really, as you watch that Raptors team, you wonder, why would he want to go anywhere else, I guess? And great that it's in a different country, and great that it's fresh, and that the East is fresh. Kudos. It's really a marvelous thing to watch.
Okay, Chris, thanks, which brings us to quickies, which are just that. Quick! I'm happy to see Tim Tebow, a possible candidate for president in 2032, maybe, play peacemaker in a Class AAA brawl between his Syracuse Mets and the Scranton Wilkes-Barre Rail Riders. But I am not happy to see Tebow's batting average barely over 150, with anemic power numbers and a strikeout rate of more than 40%. Tebow even struck out looking against a position player who was pitching in a rout. At this point, any September call-up by the hapless New York Mets would be a publicity stunt, but, you know, the Mets just might do it. They're a mess, and they know Tebow continues to draw fans in the minor leagues despite his poor individual performance. As a conscientious soul, I have a feeling Tim might say no to a big league promotion if he doesn't think he's worthy, if he senses it's a publicity stunt to sell tickets at Citi Field in September. So I have an escape hatch for Tim. It's real simple. If he's still hitting poorly in August, bow out. Remind everybody that you have work to do for ESPN. Because face it, Tim, you're a much better football analyst than a ball player. I'm glad Tim Tebow tried this, but he has been stonewalled in Class AAA. He can't play in the big leagues. Sorry. I would have loved to have seen it. Not happening. I have expressed concern before about the workload of ESPN's Stephen A. Smith, whose manic schedule and regular coast-to-coast travel has led to numerous factual errors, some quite embarrassing. But now Stephen A. is insulting his company, and that's where he's going to get himself into trouble. If the bosses are scumbags at media companies and they're doing illegal and unethical stuff, as I've seen many times, complaints about them are justified. Whistleblowing is justified. But Smith whined on the air about ESPN.com's airtight, well-reported piece concerning Lakers' dysfunction because apparently Stephen A. had to interview Magic Johnson for the network's NBA Finals special a few hours later, and he decided to complain about it. But this was off the rails. Listen to the anger. The real harsh sarcasm, and none of it's fake here. This is not an act, what you're about to hear. This is Stephen A. on no sleep, too much caffeine, too much work, and he's headed toward career sabotage, self-sabotage.
I'm not happy about it one bit. I got better things to do with my damn time. Better things to do. ESPN.com decides to come out with a story on a date at Magic. And the crew are going to be here. Do I like the fact that I have to deal with it today? Hell no. Go check it out on ESPN.com. Obviously, it's very, very important. I mean, it's the cover of ESPN.com. It's a big deal, right? Go ahead and look at it. ESPN.com. Let's make sure we mention that. It's right there. Let's make sure we mention that. ESPN.com. Go read the story. Supposedly, people had anxiety. I mean, stop the presses. Stop the presses. I mean, Magic Johnson was tyrannical as a boss. That's basically what picture they're trying to paint. Magic Johnson, what that smile that y'all see on television, all over them, permeating the airwaves. Oh my God! Stop the presses! Magic Johnson might have been a bit hardcore as a businessman. Stop the presses! Oh my God! Who's gonna catch a heart attack next? And it's actually news to y'all that this man came in there and had an attitude? Really? Really? He had an attitude. He wasn't pleasant to work for. That smile wasn't always there. He was demanding, and he wouldn't tolerate mistakes. Oh, my God. Let's get the axe. Let's take Magic Johnson to the guillotine. Let's do so. Oh, my God. That's an issue? What are y'all talking about? Are you kidding me? I mean, stop the presses. Magic Johnson, he wasn't smiling all the time. He was mean. He wasn't pleasant. And, I mean, you got some articles, some point in the stories where they actually talk about the anxiety. I had to quit. I couldn't take it. And that's why you gone.
Stephen A., some advice from somebody who once had three huge jobs in sports media. I traveled like a madman all over the world. I never thought about anything. I didn't make these factual errors. Can tell you that. Stephen A., take the summer off, recalibrate, get some massages, do some yoga, chill, or your career, I'm afraid, will not end well. And I'm rooting for Stephen A. because he has the balls to do this every day, just as I did. But they're looking to shoot you down. You know that. And Stephen A., right now, he has only his bosses in his corner. And if he keeps ripping them, nobody's going to be in his corner. And Cincinnati Reds slugger Derek Dietrich likes to admire and celebrate his home runs, seven of which have come this season against Pittsburgh, prompting Pirates broadcaster John Wehner to say that he knew Dietrich's grandfather as a nice, sweet man who must be, quote, rolling in his grave every time this guy hits a home run. He must be embarrassed of his grandson. End quote, John Wehner. You know what? I'm embarrassed for John Wehner. It's suspicious, yes, that Washington Capitals star Evgeny Kuznetsov is on a video where he's sitting at a table, apparently in a hotel room, beside two lines of white powder. The NHL is looking into it, but there is no evidence he actually used cocaine, or if that's cocaine, I think it is, but do you really know that? And as long as the precedent has been set in our industry by the deposed ESPN president, John Skipper, who was somehow not investigated by the NYPD after claiming he was extorted by a cocaine dealer in New York, then I'm not really sure where the lines of justice are, so to speak. No pun intended. Why investigate Kuznetsov when Skipper wasn't investigated for buying cocaine or for claiming he was extorted by a dealer? Again, selectivity. Why do some people get into trouble and others avoid trouble? And there might not be a more underachieving, nondescript franchise in a major market than your Chicago White Sox. I don't know. I don't know who they belong to anymore. A handful of people in the south suburbs of Chicagoland. They have won only one World Series in 100 years. This is the 100-year anniversary of the Black Sox scandal. They once employed a manager, Ozzie Guillen, who was racist, sexist, and he once referred to me as a, quote, bleeping fag, unquote. And they still have him doing commentary in the studio. I hope they have like a 30-second mute button there. They don't draw fans in a Southside ballpark that was obsolete and flawed as soon as it opened in 1991. And now, the White Sox had the employee of the month throw out a first pitch the other night. And in what might have been the worst such ceremonial pitch ever, and there have been some ugly ones, she plunked a team photographer who was standing close by, like 5 feet away, right off to the side. She winds up and plunks it blink right off the lens of his camera. Here was the photographer, Darren Georgia, replaying the episode on TV.
I got the photo, still got the shot. Camera's good, I'm good. This is I think it's a White Sox employee of the month who got to throw out the first pitch, and the gift that she gave to you was you're going to be now seen on national TV forever.
Hey, at least he was a good sport. Why? Well, I'll tell you why. Because if he said anything negative at all, the insufferable White Sox owner, Jerry Reinsdorf, would have him fired.
And now a final Mariotti commentary too hot for ESPN, too smart for the internet, and too white male for Jemele Hill. Take it away, Jay.
Pride nights have become annual fixtures in stadiums and arenas throughout professional sports, with leagues wanting to promote an atmosphere of tolerance and inclusiveness. But as I speak, there are no publicly out gay athletes competing in the four major sports in North America, as LZ Granderson points out in the Los Angeles Times, with nobody following suit after Jason Collins went public while still an active NBA player in 2013, and Michael Sam came out before he was selected in the 2014 NFL draft. That's 5 years. Which means even with significant social progress in America, gay athletes are reluctant to go public, fearing repercussions within their teams and leagues and among fans. Sam's plight has been especially harsh. He was cut repeatedly in the NFL, and then he fell into unemployment, drug use, and mental health issues in LA before moving in with relatives in his native Texas. It will take a prominent athlete to come out while in his career prime to spark dramatic change, but with millions of dollars to lose in endorsements from companies still not ready to embrace a gay athlete in a big way, that event might take years. Obviously, of the thousands of athletes on professional sports rosters, more than a few are gay, but their silence reflects this reality. Even as a gay mayor from Indiana runs for president of the United States, little progress has been made in the alpha male world of professional sports. That's our show. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever let anybody mute you in life.